Another week, another NBA sound system. Gil McGregor here with Kyle Irving. KI, what's good, man?
Can you believe that we have like roughly 10 games left in the season? I mean, I remember you and I talking about starting up this pod at the beginning of the year and how we were going to go through it and everything like that. So, you know, maybe I should have saved the shout out to the end of the year. I mean, to the end of the pod, but, you know, shout out to everybody that's tuned in all year long, listening to Gil and I talk about the NBA. And now, hey, we're getting into the best part of it. You know, the home stretch, playoff race and everything like that into the postseason. So I'm ready to go.
100%. Shout out to everybody that listens, everybody that subscribes. I mean, seriously, I say it all the time, and sometimes it doesn't come out very smooth. But we appreciate you guys for tuning into the pod, sharing it, whatever you do, and hope you continue to do that as we continue to navigate through the season and beyond, because the playoffs are right here on our doorstep, as KI just said. But, okay, I got a question for you. Should Big Blue Nation be upset with you? Should they be upset with their players, or should they be upset with Coach Cal because they were one and done and not the good kind in the NCAA tournament over the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, the podcast didn't even have a full day's shelf life before Kentucky was out of the NCAA tournament after we were gassing up their prospects and I picked them to win the national championship. So, you know, I know Calipari was getting a lot of heat on Twitter. I know they decided to retain his job. You know, I'm glad that my job is still retained, that I haven't been fired for making any improper predictions or anything like that. But man, that was ugly as hell. And that could not have gone worse for Kentucky's NBA draft prospects, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, for a while in that game, we were waiting for Reed Sheppard to just, like, do something. Then there's, you know, Jack Golke from Oakland. What March Madness is all about, right? 24-year-old, fifth or sixth year student. Drains 10 threes, one shy of the NCAA tournament record. Kentucky is out after first. And we talked about it, though. We said that, you know, this team doesn't necessarily play defense, and that could be their downfall. We just thought it would be their downfall down the line, just because, I mean, I've been victim of this too, right? Like, I remember very vividly picking Arizona to go all the way when they had DeAndre Ayton, because I knew he was going to be the number one pick, and they lost to Buffalo. So that was the opening round of the tournament. It happens. I might have been a 4-13, 3-14, whatever the case may be. So it happens. It's just funny that we were talking about them saying, yo, be on the lookout for these guys. There was nothing to see. There's nothing to see.
No, I mean, it really was nightmare fuel for, you know, even like people trying to evaluate these prospects, because you want to see them on the big stage and see how they react to that. And you want to see it for more than one game. And they didn't get further than one game. And, you know, Reed Sheppard picked a terrible night to have the worst game of the season. You know, he kind of looked like he was scared of the moment a little bit there. Rob Dillingham, I'm not really sure we learned anything different about him, just because you know that he's a streaky scorer. And when he has it going, you know, he can shoot you into a game, but he can also shoot you out of a game. So, you know, it was kind of their flaws that was known that they had that floated to the surface at the wrong time. But, you know, I didn't think that Reed Sheppard was ever really going to be in that number one pick conversation the way that he had been, you know, mocked on some mock drafts and things like that. I definitely don't think that'll be the case after a game like this, just because it really did kind of show all of his warts that, you know, not that there's a lot of them, but, you know, that there are, you know, some issues that he has that he needs to iron out in his game. But, you know, all in all, just a one and done, another disappointing loss for Kentucky. And, you know, there are, or they have, I think, what, one or two tournament wins since 2019, which is not the Big Blue Nation standard.
No, not at all. Cal got them that title 12 years ago with AD, and he's been riding off the good. I think he's on a lifetime contract too. So all that stuff that kind of came out about him potentially leaving or potentially losing his job, I guess, you know, it is what it is. Now, that being said, on the flip side, there was some good from opening weekend. And I guess my two question, or it's a two part question: did anybody help themselves in your eyes, prove themselves in your eyes? And I mean, I'm just gonna say, I picked UConn. Maybe a boring pick. They're still in it. But now that there's 16 teams left as we record this, but by the time you hear this, four or eight of those teams might have been eliminated by then. So we won't go into the picks and stuff like that. But of what you saw, it could be a team that's been eliminated already, but anybody or any team that you saw that kind of helped themselves in your eyes?
There was one player in particular who, you know, I didn't even really have on my draft radar until I started really tapping into conference tournaments and the NCAA tournament over the past couple of weeks. And that's Nefali Dante out of Oregon. That dude was an absolute monster in what I thought was the game of the tournament so far between Creighton and Oregon. You know, he has mobility. Like, he's not as clunky as you would think for someone of his size. He was eating every single rebound. He was dunking everything. Like, the dude is you know, his field goal percentage is through the roof because he doesn't really shoot anything other than layups and dunks. But, you know, the way that he was protecting the rim against someone like Ryan Kalkbrenner, who, you know, he's been a Big East Defense Player of the Year candidate type player for years now. You know, he's someone who might get a look in the NBA, especially because he does have a little bit of an ability to step out and shoot the three. So I thought Nafali Dante really helped himself. And then a player who I'm actually looking to see more from going into the Sweet 16. I hyped him up a lot on last week's pod as well. And Tennessee is still rolling on, but Dalton Knecht, like, I don't know if he is kind of experiencing some fatigue just from, you know, he's done so much for Tennessee all season long. He takes a lot of shots. He plays a lot of minutes. You know, he didn't really have his best stuff over the first two weekends, but, you know, if Tennessee's going to get over the top, he's going to have to get back to that 21 point per game score that he was all season long. So, you know, I'm curious to see if he can. I don't think he's hurt his draft stock by any means through the first 2 weeks. I mean, through the first two games, but, you know, I'm curious to see if we can see him catch fire a little bit as they look to make a deeper run here.
Yeah, no, I like those shout outs that you mentioned, the game of the tournament. Texas A&M and Houston gave that one a run for its money because that was a crazy game too, the way those games went. But one thing, and again, way before we're talking shout outs, but when I'm thinking about the teams that are left and regardless of who is still standing after you hear this, a lot of big men are holding it down. Like thinking about Donovan Klingon at UConn, thinking you mentioned Kalkbrenner, you know, thinking about Umar Ballo with Arizona. I mean, even Armando Bacot, obviously Zach Edey, DJ Burns at NC State. So to see the big fellas, as somebody who was a 6'2", 6'3 center in college, you know, I mean, sorry, in high school, I was not a 6'3 center in college, a 6'3 center in high school, but I probably shouldn't have been. But that being said, it's pretty cool to see those guys kind of holding it down on the blocks. And that is a big part of the college game, just generally speaking. And they got some big personalities and big names this year in this tournament. So we'll see where it goes. And of course, once there is a team that's last standing, we will definitely talk about that and take a look at if that potentially translates to what could happen in the draft. But it's interesting you mentioned Reed Sheppard. Like what you were saying about his like warts or like the things that he didn't do well. Like that's just no knock on him. Like he's just not a number one pick, but he's still a lottery level talent and there's nothing wrong with that. So we'll see how that plays. Now, shifting focus to what's going on in the NBA. It is a interesting time in the league, to say the least. And it's been an interesting few weeks in the NBA and, you know, the world of sports gambling and sports have really become hand to hand a lot more so this past year, especially like I'm thinking for me living in North Carolina and Mass where it's legal now, both places. But really just seeing it become prevalent and every day you turn on, see Tom Brady, see LeBron James, see Kevin Hart, whoever the case is, Rob Gronkowski, whatever, you name it. They're in the commercials. But in the NBA this past month, League Pass is now integrating odds and stuff in their interface. And then you got Rudy Gobert flashing money signs to the refs. And then you got, Tyrese Halliburton talking about the mental toll it's taken on him. JB Bickerstaff getting threats. Jason Tatum saying he feels kind of bad when he doesn't help people hit their parlays. And then it really comes to a head because the Raptors are in the center of it. Jontay Porter, it's all alleged right now, but alleged to maybe have some mysterious activity regarding him leaving games early to hit unders, a lot of money being put on his unders. Somebody said this to me, if you're betting Jontay Porter unders, call the hotline. Seriously, like I say it in jest, but also seriously. I guess the first part of it is, do you think that they're flying a little too close to the sun with like how things have been so hand in hand lately? But then second of all, like what do you make of everything that's going on right now? Like this is wild.
It is wild. And I think like it was inevitable, like with the way that leagues were starting to integrate like these sports books into their advertising and into, you know, part of their pregame, mid-game, post-game shows and everything like that. Like this is inevitable. I think the funniest thing that I mean, people are at the free throw line and you know, TNT has like the little box that's coming in. It's like, all right, Kenny and Chuck, like, what do you think of these live lines? Like, it's just crazy. Like, it's crazy to think that it went from something that was so taboo to something that's so in your face. I think like the funniest tweet that I saw, it was about like the Shohei Ohtani stuff, which, you know, I mean, I don't even know if you just mentioned it there, but like, you know, obviously he has a whole lot going on as well. And that's one of the biggest stories in sports right now. But somebody was like, yeah, we're bringing in like, you know, the FanDuel insider, Jeff Passan, giving us our ESPN bet update brought to you by DraftKings on our show that's sponsored by FanDuel. And it's just like, that like kind of feels like it's the reality right now. Like it's every other commercial. It's every, so, you know, it was only a matter of time before it happened. And, you know, MLB is finding out the hard way, because that is, you know, one of the biggest players, if not the biggest player in the game today, that is dealing with this situation. You know, the NBA, like, you know, no knock on Jonte Porter, but part of the reason why it became so obvious is because people were betting massive and massive amounts of money on Jonte Porter player props. And there were certain nights where Jonte Porter was the single most bet on player. And this is, you know, allegedly what's coming out of these reports, that he was the single most bet on player on DraftKings, both in volume of money and volume of bets. So like, that's immediately going to raise a red flag, and that is how you get caught. And, you know, the NBA is lucky that it's not happening to a bigger name player. It would be a bigger story. It would be a bigger deal, the same way that it's all over SportsCenter and all these shows right now, with Shohei Ohtani. So, you know, I, unfortunately for Jonte Porter, if this all ends up being true, I think that the NBA is going to come crashing down on him hard to set an example. But, you know, this isn't to say that it's not happening, you know, in other sports, not to say that it's not happening in other with other players in the NBA. He's just the one that's gotten caught so far. But, you know, with these two stories bubbling up at the exact same time, I think it is going to force players to realize, like, hey, if we are kind of doing this stuff behind the scenes, or you know, our friends are doing this stuff behind the scenes, like, this is kind of like a moment to be like, all right, let's take a step back here. And I think the leagues in general are going to have to take a step back and be like, okay, like, how close are we really going to allow these sports books to get to, you know, these big brands?
Yeah, it's crazy. And I guess more background on Jonte Porter is probably important. Obviously, brother of Nuggets forward Michael Porter Jr., dealt with a lot of injuries throughout the course of his career, dating back to when he was at Missouri, gets to the NBA, dealt with injuries, kind of been a fringe player because of injuries, not because of his talent. Memphis was with the Grand Rapids Drive earlier this year. Raptors signed him on a two-way deal a couple months ago. I want to say maybe back in December. And he actually has had some pretty impressive showings. He's been healthy for the team this year. So to look at, and I kind of have the story out in front of me, just saying, like you said, and I'm reading exactly from the story. As part of a daily report to users on betting results, DraftKings Sportsbook stated that the under on Porter's three-pointers was the biggest money winner for bettors of any NBA player props. Like, obviously, that's going to raise a little bit of a red flag, because, like, that is – he's a player. Like, again, if you follow the game and you know the game, if you follow the Raptors really closely, you know who Jonte Porter is. But otherwise, like, why would the masses – be doing it at that volume? You know what I mean? So of course it's going to raise a red flag. And to your point, like, the NBA is fortunate that it is a player on a two-way contract on a Raptors team that is at the bottom of the Eastern Conference standings and doesn't necessarily dominate, you know, discussion stateside, to where it's not that they can sweep this under the rug, but in a sense, it can kind of make an example of a situation, and it won't necessarily blow up the same way if it was the face of the league or one of the faces of the league involved in it. And, you know, to take both sides of it, I know that, you know, Garrett Temple spoke on it. He plays for the Raptors, but he's also like at the top of the NBA Players Association. He was saying that, you know, hopefully it's not what's implied. You never know. Like, he hasn't talked to him. He has no idea. The NBA is going to investigate thoroughly and see, you know, what to make of it. It could just have been Jonte, like, telling somebody he thought he could trust that, hey, man, I'm not feeling good, or my eyes bothering me, or whatever the case may be. That's the other part of the story. He left the game with kind of mysterious injuries, like stomach ache, eye itching, or something like that. And then he didn't hit his player prop. So that was the part that makes it so mysterious. But maybe he just told somebody that. Maybe somebody that works at Scotiabank Arena overheard him, you know, having a stomach ache, and then they had the inside drop. I have no idea, but to your point, does that lead to tens of thousands of dollars being bet on it? I don't know, but I can't speak on it.
Yeah, and actually, one other thing that I want to note, I don't know if you saw this today, but the NCAA is actually like making steps towards trying to ban player props from being available on these apps, because they don't want these players facing the scrutiny that a lot of these professional sports players do. So, you know, these types of things are going to cause a massive change in the conversation. Like, it took until this point to, I think, like, fully integrate sports betting into these massive leagues, whether it's, you know, NBA, MLB, NFL, you know, college sports even. But, you know, at the same time, like, now that it is, like, fully integrated into these leagues and that all these sponsors are everywhere and the commercials are, you know, every single commercial break and it's popping up mid game and on the bottom line and everything. Now it's time to, like, kind of take a step back and be like, okay, how can we kind of, like, make this more digestible, less in your face, less prominent in, like, you know, throughout games and everything like that. And, you know, I mean, you said that thing about League Pass, like, if anything, like, you know, this is just a sign to be like, all right, maybe we don't need to do all that. Maybe we don't need to be able to live bet through NBA League Pass. But, you know, at the same time, it's making these, you know, leagues a lot of money, and it's making these sports books even more money. And, you know, as a good friend of mine always says, casinos aren't getting any smaller and sports books aren't getting any smaller. So a lot of people are losing. And as long as they're bringing in the money, I don't know how much they're actually going to care about, you know, the optics of this type of stuff. So it's going to be an interesting and developing story. And as someone who, you know, I don't really gamble anymore, but, like, I have a big interest in it, and it, like, it definitely makes me curious to see, like, what the direction is moving forward in this.
Yeah. I was going to say to kind of wrap that up a little bit, you mentioned the student athlete part and what the NCAA is trying to do. And it made me think, like, we've kind of, not that, and again, like, I'm glad that it's been legalized and it's not like people aren't going through shady methods to do this or whatever, because anything can be fun in moderation, right? Everything is fine in moderation. But it made me think about the Iowa State scandal that was, like, just like kind of transpired over the past year, right? With their student athletes being involved and stuff. Thought about the Kayshon Booty stuff that happened, you know, at LSU. The path wide receiver Kayshon was betting on, at least he was betting on his overs, and he was, you could tell he was upset he wouldn't get the targets. People thought he was upset he wouldn't get the ball. He was trying to hit his own overs for his own good. But it's just crazy because I'm curious, and, you know, and we won't get too deep into the NCAA, but I'm a little dubious. I know that, I'm sure that there's some good nature of them not wanting players subject to scrutiny, but I'm sure they want to just completely remove themselves from any possibility of something like what just happened with Jontay Porter to happen. Like, you know, what if a kid's in the doghouse, a kid didn't turn his, you know, paper in, and he knows he's suspended for the first half of a game, and he tells some people, and, you know, that happens. Like, it's not right. It's not right that that would happen, but you could see, like, a college student, you know, not necessarily having the best judgment to do that, and then it just plays out that way where a bunch of people are just laying the juice on a guy who told a group of people that he wasn't playing in a Discord group or whatever the case may be, and then that happens. So I think the NCAA probably wants to stay away from the scandal because they realize, again, like, hey, we can say that which is true, we're keeping people away from scrutiny, but we also can avoid the black eye because the NCAA is really fighting for its life already with everything that's going on. So to say that, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, and now that we've already, like, kind of covered the, like, you know, where this is a serious subject side of it. Like, I don't know if you've seen these videos of, like, Jontay Porter, like, banking in a three and looking stressed as he's coming down the court. or like Shohei Ohtani and his translator, like, you know, they're, like, throwing the baseball and trying to see who can get it to, like, balance on the bench, and then, like, a massive celebration. It's just like, all right, well, this is a little sketchy, and it's kind of hilarious at the same time, but, you know, it's obviously a serious subject, and I'm very curious to see how it unfolds.
Yeah, the last thing I was going to say, there's like a 7-minute breakdown of, like, Jontay Porter plays. And the funniest, well, again, not funny, but funny, ironic, right? One of the plays that they were showing was him at the free throw line. And as he's at the free throw line, like you said, I think it was like a FanDuel ad, is running while he's at the free throw line. And it's like, you can't make this stuff up. But it is what it is. It's the state of sports. And at the end of the day, these people who make a lot of money to sign these deals off and figure this stuff out, they make a lot of money to figure out how to navigate these situations. And I'm sure that, you know, at a certain point we'll figure out, like, how to find this happy medium. And maybe there isn't a happy medium. We'll have to find a medium that we're all comfortable with, because the biggest thing is nobody ever wants to question the integrity of the game. And I don't think that I guys are too, like, staunch competitors at the end of the day. And there's nothing, no doubt in my mind. And because I've heard, actually, I remember hearing the NBA players, like, are barred from betting on the NBA, obviously, but, like, the G League, the Basketball Africa League, the WNBA, like, they can't touch any of that stuff. So if anybody's ever questioning the integrity of the game, they have a lot of means to ensure that the game is as pure as it needs to be.
And meanwhile, you have like Josh Hart on NFL Sundays and LeBron James on NFL Sundays. Like Josh Hart's like tweeting through, like, you know, the heartbreak of a parlay, like falling on a last second field goal, and LeBron's hopping on IG Live, like giving his like weekly NFL picks. It's just, it's a mess, but it's kind of like great at the same time. Like, this is sort of what we asked for, right? Like with these, like all these, you know, sports books becoming legal in the United States and everything like that. Like, we kind of asked for this. And now that it's here, it's like, oh no, like all this is happening. It's like, what the hell did you think was going to happen? But, you know, hey, that's the state of sports right now. And it's not going away anytime soon. So we're going to have to get used to it.
Absolutely. And to wrap that up, they're fans just like us at the end of the day, outside of basketball, because they have too much information there. But when it comes down to like Josh Hart asking players how they woke up today, if they're feeling dangerous or whatever, they're just like us. Their fans are watching the game. They're enjoying it. And it is what it is. They play fantasy. They put a little money down. Well, actually, probably put a lot of money down, because they're not like us in that respect. But still, they're enjoying it. They're watching the game.
Take that up with Tommy Pham. Tommy Pham's throwing punches, like getting suspended in MLB games over fantasy football leagues. But anyway, I'm going to let you segue. I'm going to let you get back to it.
Oh, man. That's a great segue to say, for those of you who do enjoy, we'll have some things maybe you want to know for some futures for NBA playoffs, because some teams who we're eyeing down here, because like Kyle said, 10/under 10 games left in the season, and there's a lot to be sorted out in the standings in the Eastern and Western Conference. So we'll take a quick break. We'll talk about the play-in tournament picture and some potential first round matchups depending on the way things shake out. So by the time you hear this, there will be a little over 2 weeks, or maybe just around 2 weeks, remaining in the NBA regular season. I think it ends on Sunday, April 14th. As it stands, we know the Celtics are number one in the Eastern Conference by a country mile, by whatever you want to call it, mile. They've clinched number one, and they have an 11-game lead over number two. You don't see that very often. But after that, we don't really know anything else. Western, Eastern Conference is like it's interesting, because like we've talked about this throughout the season, and we thought there'd be some separation, but they're still those same clusters. Eastern Conference 3 and 6 are separated by 3.5 games with 10 games left. Probably not time for some of those teams to make up the ground, but Western Conference is that three-way battle for number one between Denver, OKC, and Memphis. Then you got the Clippers, Pelicans, and now the Mavericks have won 5 in a row as we record this. They could lose tomorrow, who knows, but they've kind of gotten in the mix for that 4, 5, 6 seed as well. But personally right now, for me, what's most compelling is the play-in tournament in the Western Conference specifically. We sit here and we record here on Wednesday, March 27th. And as we record, Sacramento's 42-30, Phoenix is 42-30, and they have a brutal schedule to close the season. The Lakers are 40-32, 8 games over .500, and they're in 9th place. And then the Warriors are 37-34. And our shout out from last week is still holding strong, because as we record this, the Rockets have won 9 in a row. Their schedule is about to turn up a little bit, but they won 9 in a row to move within one game of that 10th place. So seems like there's a cluster now. It's either going to be Golden State or Houston. Lakers have a little wiggle room to move up, but they also are probably at least locked in the 9, just given that gap that they have. I don't know. I really don't know how it's going to go. Like, the Lakers seem like they figured something out in this while, because people love to dunk on the Lakers so much. And for a team that's 8 games over .500 is probably the best basketball they've played in a while, and like the best they've looked as a whole, and they're 9th in the Western Conference. So how do you see this playing out? Can the Lakers catch anybody? Do you think that everybody would prefer to only have to win one game to get into the playoffs, and I think the Lakers definitely fall in line with that, but they can't even do anything to avoid Denver, because they don't know if Denver's going to be first or third by the end of it all.
Yeah, I mean, you were the one that said it, like, going into this. I feel like the last couple of years, like, as we're coming down to the home stretch of the NBA season, there's always been that conversation of like I remember a couple of years ago when the Celtics were like, I think they're going to finish second, and like their potential matchup was the Nets, and they had a chance to, you know, if they lost a couple of games, they had a head to head with the Bucks, and if they sat everybody, like, they could have dropped to third. And at the time, Udoka was kind of just like, no, like, we're going to play who's in front of us. Like, the basketball gods will reward you for playing the game the right way, and yada, yada, yada. And then, you know, they ended up sweeping the Nets in the first round. But, you know, there isn't really any wiggle room. You were the one that said this before we even hopped on. Like, there's no wiggle room to do that in you know, the standings this year, because everything is so tight in the Western Conference that the moment you start to position yourself to avoid Denver in the first round, you could literally fall out of the play-in range and miss the playoffs altogether. Or you could, you know, if you're trying to get from, you know, whatever it is, 7-6 or 6-5, like no matter where you're trying to move, there's another team that is within a game or two games that could easily come and swipe your seed. So, you know, I think this is like a quick shout out to the play-in tournament, even for, you know, the people that still haven't come around to the idea of like what the play-in tournament is and what it brings to the NBA. Like, this is what it brings. There's 10 games left in the season, and there's still a reason to tune into, you know, all of these games. I found myself glued to the TV last night watching, you know, Lakers Bucks, watching Warriors Heat, you know, trying to figure out where these teams are going to end up and how many games back they're going to be from, you know, 9th or 8th or whatever it is as I'm watching these teams play. So, you know, we're coming into the home stretch of the season, and obviously, like, it's very enticing, the battle for first place between Denver and Oklahoma City. I don't know if it'll actually end up being the case. I still firmly believe that if the Oklahoma City Thunder finish in first place in the Western Conference, Shiggles Alexander should be MVP of the NBA. I don't know if that's going to be the case. We just went on a massive rant about betting in sports and everything like that. Jokic now has minus odds to be the MVP. So, you know, it's really leaning in his favor, but OKC was not supposed to be at the top of the standings. And if they end up in the first seed, Shea should win MVP, in my opinion. But also, like, that's absolutely massive that you don't necessarily have to go through Denver in a potential game 7 to get to the NBA Finals, one of the toughest places to play in the entire league. So, like, there is still so much at stake. And then you talk about, like, the matchups for the teams in the play-in tournament. Like, you know, I don't think any team in the first round, even Denver, would want to see Los Angeles or see Golden State in the first round of the playoffs. Like, with teams that have that much playoff experience, you would just rather see just about anybody else other than those two teams. So, you know, I still believe, even though the way that the Rockets have been surging, and it's awesome to see Jalen Green exploding the way that he has and them doing this, you know, basically right after Alperen Şengün went down with that ankle injury, that's kept him out for basically almost the entire win streak. Like, I give them a lot of credit for fighting the way that they have, but I still kind of feel like it's going to be the Warriors that finish in 10th, the Lakers that finish in 9th. And then, you know, we don't really know how it's going to shake out between Sacramento and Phoenix in 7th and 8th, but and then the Mavericks, even the Pelicans, who now are dealing with, you know, Sabi, if you've heard this before, another injury right around playoff time where Brandon Ingram had that bizarre hyperextended knee that's going to keep him out for an indefinite period. So, you know, the Western Conference is going to be a gauntlet. The playoffs are going to be a gauntlet. No matter what seed you get, it's going to be really tough to get out of the first round. And, you know, I think that's something that makes what this home stretch of the season into the play-in tournament, into the postseason, is going to be so exciting, because, you know, any team can really win on any given night. And I feel like any of these teams could kind of beat up on each other in the first round of the playoffs. And if we see some higher seeds start to drop in the first round of the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me at all.
This is going to feel disrespectful to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Are we sure about Phoenix? Like, I talked about their schedule being pretty brutal. Tonight, after we wrap up, they're playing in Denver tonight. Then they go to OKC. Shea's been a little banged up, so maybe that's not as tough. They go to New Orleans, also banged up, so they might catch a break there. But they close a season, and I'm just going to go through it because there are not that many games left. Cleveland at home, Minnesota at home, New Orleans at home, Clippers at home. Then they close the season at the Clippers, at the Kings, at the Timberwolves. Not really a night off. And again, I say it feels disrespectful because they have Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal on that team. But that being said, they also just lost to the Wimby-less Spurs. So that's one I know that they wish they could have back. They're 42-30 right now. So if they slip up, the Lakers actually have a really advantageous schedule, save for a trip to Indiana, which they've done really well against the Pacers this year, even in their extra battle during the in-season tournament. But I guess the follow-up with that, too, with one, are we sure about the Suns? It's crazy to think that of one of the, like, two of the Kings, Suns, Lakers, and Warriors aren't going to make the playoffs. And I guess from a disappointment/failure ranking, who do you think it would be the biggest letdown if they don't make the playoffs this year of those 14?
That is a loaded question, because, like, you could make the case for any of them. Like, the Suns just went all in and traded every like future asset that they have to assemble this big three. The Lakers are, you know, up against father time, even though LeBron continues to somehow win that battle. Like, you know that, you know, within however many years. I don't even want to put a limit on it because the guy could play as long as he wants, but like retirement is not, is in the not too distant future. The Warriors are trying to maximize this dynasty window, and missing the playoffs completely would be a massive failure. So like, and then you have the Kings who, like, everyone kind of, myself included, expected to take a step forward after having a really successful year last year. And it felt like for a while that was going to be the case, but then they continue to shoot themselves in the foot too. And it seems like they lose games they should win and win games they should lose. And like, you know, they can never figure it out and get on the same page. So like, it's hard not to ride the fence, I guess, like just because of the level of pressure that they have compared to every other team in the NBA. The Lakers and Warriors are in a kind of a conversation of their own just because of the coverage they get and the press that they get and how hard everybody is on them, how hard their fan base is on them, how hard other fan bases are on them. Like, they're kind of in a gridlock tie for the most disappointing. But like, you know, if the Suns were to lose in the play-in tournament, like, that's a massive failure as well. And they don't really have a lot of wiggle room with that roster either. So like, you know, I feel like those three teams, it's crazy to think that, like you said, like two of those three teams are not going to make it. And the Kings are very much in that conversation as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, the Western Conference playoffs is going to be a gauntlet, man. Like, it's going, and that's the, that is kind of the curse of the play-in tournament as well, is that it's not a series. So like, if you don't show up that one night, I know you as a, you know, kind of a pseudo Hornets fan, you, I don't want to cut, you are a Hornets fan, but you know, you don't own it every now and then. I'm messing with you, but but they got blown out in the play-in tournament twice in a row, 2 years in a row. It's like, back-to-back years, like absolutely rugged. So if you don't show up that one night, like that's it, your season's over. Like if, you know, Steph has one cold shooting night, or, you know, LeBron, knock on wood, would never want this to happen, but like just tweaks that ankle that's been bothering them all year, like that could be the end of their season. So, you know, it makes for some must-see TV. And the fact that, I mean, hey, like Adam Silver in the NBA is thrilled that these are the teams that are in the play-in tournament, because viewership is going to be through the roof, probably more than some playoff series. But, you know, at the same time, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out, because not having some of those teams that we're talking about right now in the actual playoffs is going to be very bizarre.
I mean, you just said it 2 years ago, right? Clippers lose to the Timberwolves on the road, come back home for that second game, Paul George, positive COVID test, can't play, and they're done.
Crazy.
Right? Like, that's crazy. That's exactly what it is. Because Kawhi didn't play that year, and their best player was available 2 days prior. They come home for a game where they have home court advantage, and they should have won that. Well, the Pelicans dug deep and got that one. All credit to what they did in that game. But, you know, for them to be up 10, 12 points late in the game, the Pelicans to come back like that and win, that's exactly what you're talking about. You can't afford, like, it's a game seven every time. And I think one last thing I'll say, I will say one, because of their roster, I think the Suns would be the biggest letdown for them. They completely overhauled the roster. They won 64 games 2 years ago and took a step back last year. I think they saw the writing on the wall and that they wanted to try something different. But to be stuck now and, you know, going all in on a guy, trading all your assets for a guy who has a no trade clause. Kevin Durant isn't getting any younger. He's still going to be Kevin Durant as long as basketball is round, but he's not getting any younger. I'm just saying, in a sense of, you know, this is got to maximize his window too. And maximizing his window isn't not making the playoffs. And they're going to have to pay Grayson out. And I saw he's like eligible for an exorbitant figure. And like, they're probably going to have to give it to him because he's been playing really well. So they're in a weird spot, and they're going to have to go on luxury tax this at the third, so they better hope that they don't miss the playoffs. But the last thing I was going to say is, wild. Like, we're talking about these teams about, like, man, this could be, you know, maybe some type of letdown or disappointment, and, man, they can't afford to mess around. Like, all these teams could end up finishing the season like 10-plus games over 500. That's the craziest part, right? Like, you know, these teams could end up, you know, being like 46-36, And when you look at the Eastern Conference, and not to rag on them, but like, you know, 1 through 8, it's clean cut. But then 9 is the Bulls at 34-38, 10 is the Hawks at 32-39, and then the Nets and the Raptors technically haven't been mathematically eliminated yet. But that being said, just flipping, I think in the Eastern Conference, it's a little more interesting to see how things fall into place after the Celtics and how some matchups might shape up. That 50-win Magic thing is still alive until it's not alive anymore. You know, the Cavs, Donovan Mitchell is going to be back in lineup after it caught some friendly fire from Tristan Thompson, who broke his nose. It was actually Tristan Thompson's first game back from suspension. He comes back and breaks his the franchise player's nose going up for a rebound. But we've talked a lot about the Western Conference, Eastern Conference. What is most compelling, most intriguing by the way this is shaping out?
I think what's most compelling is like the Miami Heat sitting in number seven in the Philadelphia 76ers sitting in number eight right now. Like those are two teams that at the beginning of the year, I would have sharpied them into a top six finish, especially after like what the Heat had to go through just to get to the finals last year. Like you would have thought they would have learned their lesson and then, you know, kind of kicked their butt into gear earlier in the season and found a way and, you know, injuries get in the way and things like that. And that was the case for them for a little bit. Like Tyler Harrow still hasn't, you know, been back in the lineup. But I feel like those are the two teams that, you know, everybody expected to be in that top six. And same thing for the 76ers, obviously, with Joel Embiid's knee injury. But now all of a sudden, like they're going to face each other in that first play-in tournament, game. One of them is going to get the number seven seed. And then the other one is going to have to fight for their lives just to, you know, potentially have a first round matchup against the Boston Celtics as the number one seed. So, you know, those are two teams that I don't think anybody really wants to see in the, like, I don't think Milwaukee or Boston want to see either of those teams in the first round of the playoffs. But the way that it's shaping up right now, like this isn't to say they can't jump the Pacers. They're only a game and a half back from Indiana for the number six seed in the Eastern Conference. You know, this is by no means over, but the 76ers have really, really played bad basketball since Joel Embiid got injured. That defense has looked terrible and they have not been able to stay afloat. And then, you know, the Heat, I mean, they're kind of hit or miss. Like they have nights like last night against the Warriors where they just get completely routed at home. And you feel like that shouldn't happen in a game where they're fighting for, you know, a top six seed. So, you know, those are two teams that if Joel Embiid comes back for the playoffs, playing whatever it is, it, you know, the Heat, they already made that run last year. Like they don't really care who their opponent is. They don't care how they have to do it. Like they're battle tested and they're ready to get there. But at the same time, like you said, like, you know, all it takes is, you know, one bad break. And all of a sudden, you know, you're playing in a play-in tournament game that's win or go home and your season could be over in the blink of an eye. So, you know, For Boston and Milwaukee, like it's kind of shaping up oddly for them that they might have to face one of those two teams in the first round of the playoffs. But at the same time, like those two teams are where they are in the standings for a reason. And I don't know if they're going to be able to just kind of flip a switch. You know, the 76ers in particular, once Joel Embiid comes back, like how easy is it really going to be for them to flip a switch and now all of a sudden have to take care of business against Boston or Milwaukee in the first round of the playoffs?
I like the way you said that. Those teams are there where they are for a reason, because unlike the Western Conference where teams are just beating up on each other and they're largely playing good basketball, they just it's a gauntlet of a conference. There are things that have very clearly impacted these teams and injuries are a part of it. But at the same time, you can't just say, oh, man, Joel Embiid is going to come back in the lineup having not played basketball in months. And he is, you know, the reigning MVP until somebody else dethrones him. And he is a top five, top 10 player in the NBA. I mean, and I say top five player, he's definitely a top five player in the NBA, but when he's not 100%, you know, top 10 player in the NBA, but he doesn't just get back on the court and get the dominating like he was before. Maybe he does, but it might take a little time for him to get back to that level. So I think the interesting thing about that, and you said anything goes, you know, if it holds, Miami plays Philly, it's going to be a battle. One of those teams advances. But then they go and they come, they have a home game and their one game of DeMar DeRozan not being able to miss from the mid range, or Trae Young coming back and hitting six threes in the first half of a game from not making the playoffs either. So I think the disappointment thing, those teams kind of have built-in excuses. I know that Miami franchise is not one to subscribe to excuses of this or that and the third, but they do have them, unlike some of those teams in the Western Conference. Last thing I'll tell you, and this applies to both conferences, last year we saw the Heat as an 8 seed go to the finals. We saw the Lakers as a 7 seed go to the conference finals. Do you think that that just kind of speaks to seeding doesn't necessarily matter anymore? It's more about matchups. Teams that are poised and battle tested don't care where the games are played. They have to play in game 7 at home or on the road. Or do you think it was a little more of an anomaly and we'll see the top seeds kind of get back to dominating this year?
I think it's more of the former. Like, I think that these teams that are battle tested that have been here before, like, you know, they don't care if they have to win two basically game sevens to get into the playoffs, or win one basically game seven to get into the playoffs. And once they get there, you know, it's business as usual. So, you know, we saw Miami do it last year. Like, all they've beaten Milwaukee in the playoffs before prior to that. So like they get that first round matchup and, you know, Milwaukee first off is probably like, damn, I really didn't want to see the Heat in the first round. And then on top of that, the Heat are like, all right, we've already been here before. Like, especially with a guy like Jimmy Butler, who really just plays with that type of like, I don't give a damn attitude that we can beat anybody on any given night. Like if that's your leader and you're like following him into battle, like that's going to be the result. And that's exactly what we saw last year. It's the same thing against Celtics. Like they had already beaten the Celtics in a playoff series, you know, to reach the NBA finals. Like, so all they had to do was do it again. And they came one shot shy of doing it the year prior. So it's like, you know, these teams like Miami, these teams like, I don't want to say Philly because, you know, they have constantly come up short of the Eastern Conference finals, but, you know, they have a lot of playoff experience. And then obviously in the Western Conference, you talk about the Lakers and the Warriors. We talk about that all the time on this podcast about, you know, how they're the type of team that none of those younger teams are going to want to see in the first round. Like, it makes me think that I don't want to say seeding doesn't matter because it does. Like, they're these teams that are at the top for a reason because they were that good all year long. I mean, what's the stat? Like, nobody that's lower than a third seed has ever won the NBA Finals, right? Or is it a fourth seed?
I think the lowest seed to ever win is a six, but that was a Rockets. Oh, okay. They were back to back Rockets in 95. I want to say okay. They made Clyde Drexler trade midseason. They had just won, and they had Hakeem Olajuwon. So like,
right. Okay, okay.
Typical 60, right?
Right. But it feels like, you know, at least in, you know, the recent years, like we haven't seen a lower seed actually like win the NBA Finals in a long time.
I was going to say probably since they switched to best of seven in the first round, right? Because that was in 2003. So the last 21 years, I couldn't tell you off the top of my head the lowest seed to win a championship, but I don't think that it was that low of a seed for sure.
Yeah, so like seeding does definitely still matter, and like being great all regular season long still means something. But it definitely counts like with the play-in tournament, also too. Like I don't know, like I mean maybe this is crazy, especially because then you have to go in and play like a 7-game series. But like to bring it back to March Madness, like every year now we've seen some first four teams make a run. I mean Colorado ended up winning one tournament game and then got bounced in a really really good game against Marquette in the second round. But like you know we've seen plenty of those play-in tournament game or you know first four games. Teams that win those games go on like a little bit of a run. We've seen teams go all the way to the Final Four. UCLA did it after winning in the first four. So it is kind of weird too, how like it can give you a little bit of momentum. It is different in the NBA, obviously, because you win that one must win game and then you have to go win a 7-game series. That is way different than like riding the momentum of winning one must win game and then having to just continue to win must win games. But you know, it does add another element of, you know, I think the Miami Heat started feeling themselves a little bit last year after they found their way out of the play-in tournament. And then once they beat Milwaukee, it was like, you know, their seeding didn't matter at all. They were the dangerous Miami Heat that nobody wants to see in the playoffs. So, you know, I think in both conferences, like specifically if it's Miami and Philly with a at least somewhat healthy Joel Embiid, and then the Western Conference with any of the four teams that we have been talking about, like that is going to make for a really, really tough first round matchup for any team that is sitting there waiting for the results of the play-in tournament.
I like that you pointed out like the fact that there are teams that have been there before and done it before, because I'm thinking back to the formula, the way they got it done. Like the Lakers knew they needed to go to Memphis last year and steal game one, and they went and got it. And that completely changed the outlook of the season, that series. They had the level of confidence from that. They did the same thing in the second round, even though it was like a 7 seed versus a 6 seed, but they went to Golden State. And the Golden State's series went over Sacramento was a little bit different. Everybody, you know, did what they did. You know, I think they ended up stealing home court in game five. And then the Kings actually got a tough win that they dug deep. And I think that showed they were ahead of schedule. But then Steph Curry in game seven. Right. But that formula of stealing home court, you know, they know they have to do it. You just got to win one on the road and take care of home. So I think that's an interesting thing to think about and to see where that goes. So those teams that are capable of doing it, Sixers maybe not so much, but those other teams are definitely capable of doing it. We'll see how that plays out as the playoffs roll around. As we wrap up here, Kyle, you got a shout out this week. What's going on? What's caught your eye? Are we going back to the people that have listened to us all year? Because I think that's a good shout out to begin with, but you know, you got it.
I think that would have been a good shout out, but I actually had something different in store here. I've been tapping into the women's NCAA tournament and just in general trying to be like a better, you know, WNBA fan and everything like that. It's really tough because I'm a big baseball big baseball fan and the seasons overlap a little bit, but tapping into the women's NCAA tournament, I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Paige Beckers because I feel like everybody forgot about Paige. And it's like Caitlin Clark is getting all this attention and all the records and everything like that. And Paige is coming off a torn ACL and she has been absolutely balling in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend like I'm an expert. Like I said, I'm like trying to become a better fan. I'm trying to watch more and things like that. But like, are we sure that she's not going to be the better WNBA player? Like, are we sure that she isn't the all around better player? Like, I'm, you know, doing everything more than just shooting and scoring. Like I said, I'm starting to tap in. I'm starting to try and watch a little bit more to form my own opinions and things like that. But as I, you know, found myself watching the highlights, watching her game, everything like that, I'm just like, she still got it and she is still so talented. And I'm not 100% sure that, you know, it's a foregone conclusion that she's not going to end up being the better WNBA player. So I guess I'll leave you a little bit of a hot take there.
I feel you. Did you know Oriyema just said the same thing? Obviously, he's a little biased, but he said it the other day after Paige led their team to the Sweet 16 last weekend. And I think people forget that she was voted National Player of the Year as a freshman. Not National Freshman of the Year. She was National Player of the Year. And she, like you mentioned, you know, two seasons riddled with injuries, ACL. I think it was a broken leg as well, a kneecap, something like that. So finally bouncing back. To remind everybody, I still got it. This is what I do, and playing the level she's playing at, and also she's decided to come back to Storrs, and she's going to play another year at Connecticut next year. She almost certainly would have been the number two pick in the WNBA draft this year, and let Kyle tell him, maybe should have gone first overall, but now GMs don't have to worry about making that decision this year. That's a great shout out. I was going to shout out to Juju Watkins as well at USC. Just broke the school record for most points in a season. I think she's at like 881 counting or something like that. You and I just talked about the ridiculousness of, you know, scoring 4,000 points in their career. Well, she's on her way because she's a freshman, a true freshman, like won't turn 19 until this summer freshman. And like her, she has so much room to grow and she's already one of the best players in the country. And like her efficiency can get even better. So when she's an even more efficient scorer, she's going to improve upon the 27 points per game she's averaging as a freshman. My shout out, a good friend of the program, not a friend of the program, but somebody we used to follow a little bit more closely. Shout out to Delano Benton, man. He's been balling. Wow. With the Trailblazers. Wow. I know the Trailblazers. It's kind of a deep cut, but you know what? I think that people raise their eyebrows when the Raptors drafted him a few years ago. He was the same draft class as Scottie Barnes. Ended up in Boston. People were like, what's this guy gonna do? And then he gets traded to Portland. Kind of seemed like he was a throwaway, but definitely something in there. And I say that because I'm looking right now as we record this. He has 25 points, 8 assists, and 4 boards off the bench for Portland in Atlanta right now with 8 minutes left to play in the game. He's found his stride in Portland. So he's a good NBA player. I don't think anybody would have predicted that 21 games of the Trailblazers prior to tonight, averaging 15 points, 4.5 boards, 3 assists per game. So shout out to Delano Benton and all the doubters he's proven wrong.
Nah, man, I can't let you do this to me. Delano Benton is the single reason that my fantasy team was bouncing the first round of the playoffs. I almost got bad blood with Delano Benton at this point. The squad finished with like 120 wins and finished in first place by like over 10 games. And the dude that I was playing in the first round of the fantasy playoffs picked up Delano Benton, and that's when he started going off. So he is basically the reason that I got bounced in the first round of the playoffs. So, you know, my blood's boiling again. You're getting me worked up. I guess shout out to Delano Benton because he's been playing really well, but I can't stand for that. I can't stand for it.
For those of you who thought we pre-coordinated our shout-outs beforehand, this is proof that we didn't because I had no idea. I just brought that up for Kyle, but it is what it is. I guess that tells you don't bet against Delano Benton, but sometimes you have no choice in the matter. You go against him in fantasy. Or next year when we do our fantasy preview, see, maybe that's a late-round sleeper you get, especially
if there still, you go.
with the Trailblazers. They've been doing some wild stuff. They started 5 rookies the other day. I don't think I've ever seen that before in my life, so shout out to Chauncey Billups for having the patience to deal with that as well. But now that I got Kyle's blood boiled, I think that's a perfect note to end this. I want to let Kyle steam in his personal time and not give me the scowl that he's giving me right now. Kidding. Kyle is laughing through the pain of having lost because of Delano Benton. But as we said at the top of the show, we appreciate everybody who subscribes to the show. Please continue to listen to the show wherever you get your podcast and share it with a friend if you like what you hear this time. For Kyle Irving. My name is Gil McGregor. Thanks again for tuning in to NBA Sound System. We will catch you back here same time next week.